Mental illness is epidemic in America, and the problem is spreading worldwide. It's time for decisive action, because the battle for the mind is part of a much larger war being waged between good and evil, with you as the prize. Welcome to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. On this program, we'll uncover Bible-based weapons for fighting destructive feelings and resolving inner conflicts. Dr. Jennings wants to arm you with the tools necessary for achieving emotional and mental stability as you strengthen your relationship with God. I'm your Simple Solutions host, Charles Mills. I was talking with a friend the other day, and she told me of a situation in her family that was causing them all a lot of grief. Her son, in his mid-30s, lost his wife to illness 3 years ago. Now, even though he's dating another wonderful woman, he can't seem to shake his attachment to his dead wife. He still mourns for her to the point of being unable to fully relate to anyone else in a meaningful way. There's a lot of bitterness, resentment, and anger, especially at God, over the loss. Losing a spouse is a terrible experience, but life continues, and we've got to move on. At least, that's what I think. Today, let's see what Dr. Jennings thinks about this situation, as well as others, and other what I call unhealthy attachments to those who are in or have been in our lives. Dr. Jennings, let's explore these dynamics in the situation. I know we can't be specific, but we certainly can give some overviews on this thing. What are your first thoughts as you heard me tell this story?
There are several thoughts that come to mind that probably need exploration. One of the general principles of this individual you've described is pursuing a new relationship. But generally, we can't engage in healthy relationships unless we're healthy people. And it's what you're describing to me is somebody who has a genuine injury, genuine heartache, genuine woundedness of heart and mind. But I'm questioning whether those wounds have adequately been healed before pursuing a new relationship. So that's the first thing that pops in my mind. Secondly, I wonder, okay, what is going on in the mind regarding his relationship to God and how he sees God involved in this process? And then third, the general issues of grief and grieving. What's going on with the history of his wife, the history of that relationship? What is it that he, other than the loss itself, is there something in there that he is having trouble coming to peace with? All these things would be in my mind. Other things, and I think maybe we've lost Charles here. Other things that we'd want to talk about then would we'd want to talk about the normal grieving process. And I have patients in my office that have lost loved ones. And oftentimes what happens when we lose a loved one is that we struggle with this part of us. When we lost something that we love, we don't want to go on without it. We want to somehow turn the clock back and reverse history as it's unfolded. So these are you back, Charles?
Yes, I'm right here. And that is an issue that a lot of us face in a lot of areas. Some of us look back, and it's hard for us to let go of what was. It might be a place we lived, the work we had, the relationship we had. It is just difficult for us to let go. Is letting go a healthy thing to do?
If it's done in the right way, when we've lost something, think about a wound, when we've been wounded. Think about a physical wound. Somebody's taken a knife, gashed your leg. Now, once you've been wounded, we can't reverse history and undo it. We don't get a redo. So once we have a wound, we have only three options. Option number one, let's do what we can to heal it as quickly as possible. Sutures, antibiotics, antiseptics, let's get it well as quick as we can. Option number two, let's ignore it. Nothing wrong with me, I'll be fine. Don't do anything. Option number three, purposely and actively infect it. Get some manure and rub in it. Well, these are our three options. When we've been wounded, we only have those three. Yeah. Deal with it effectively to bring healing, ignore it, infect it. Emotional wounds are the same way. When we've been wounded emotionally, we generally don't get a chance to reverse history and undo the wound. So we have three options. Deal with it as quickly as we can to bring healing as quickly as possible, as effectively as we can to bring healing as quickly as possible. Ignore it, Nothing wrong with me. I'll be fine. Suppress it. Distract ourselves. Go into busyness of some kind. Alcohol, drugs, other things. Infect it. Make it worse. And this is exactly what people do when they've had losses. Yeah. And what you've described to me about your friend, I'm wondering if he's not done. And most people, reflexively, when it comes to emotional wounds, when it comes to physical wound, almost everybody, when they've been gashed, when they have a broken leg, when you see something, a bone sticking out your arm, okay, most people instantly go to the doctor to deal with it as effectively as we can to get healing as quickly as we can. But on emotional wounds, the reflexive people, the majority, will ignore and infect. That's what we tend to do.
It's almost like we like mourning in some level. It's almost like we like those feelings of anger. Is this true? Do we actually like this, or are we somehow skewed on this?
Well, that's an interesting thought, because most of us, we don't like pain, and we don't like heartache, and we don't like loss, and we don't like to stay in pain. So then why do people often mourn and grieve and stay in pain? There's a couple there's multiple reasons why people will actually make choices that keep them hurting longer. On an unconscious level, one of those actually is that they don't, because they don't want to let go, because they don't want to be without the person they've lost, because they don't want to go on without that person. As long as the pain is real and palpable, it feels as if that person isn't that far away.
Oh, my.
And so sometimes people are reluctant to heal and let go because it is really letting go, and they know they'll never have them back. And because they want them back, they hold on. And what they have to realize, what they're holding on to, they're not holding on to the person. They're only holding on to pain. But sometimes the mind will create an illusion. When I feel the pain, I'm feeling the pain because of that person, and it's like keeping them close. But they're not close.
The pain is all they have of that person. The person's gone, but they have the pain.
Well, the pain is not all they have. That's not true. They have memories. They have experiences. They have history. That history that we've had with people in our lives, that history does not get changed. We don't lose that history. And because if we've spent significant time that we've really come to love someone, our lives, our character has been impacted. We will take forward with us elements of that person that they have changed us in some way. Whether it's folding the towels differently because they taught us to fold the towels that way, or it's a saying or wisdom or a song that they taught us, but we take aspects of that person with us. So no, it's not just the pain that's all that's left, but the pain is very, very powerful and deep, and it makes us feel as if it's not that far away.
Dr. Jennings, you mentioned guilt in a conversation we had about this subject. Is it possible for this person, could he possibly be feeling that guilt about dating another woman? He wants to be with a woman, he wants to have a relationship, but he's feeling guilt about it because he said, "I do and I promise," to his dead wife.
Well, I would have to speculate because I haven't talked to this person.
But
even before they get into the dating aspect, it is extremely common for people to feel guilty after the loss of a loved one over their death. If I would have done this, if I would have done that, if I would have been there, if I would have taken time off work, if I would have taken her on that vacation, if we would have gone to this doctor, if we'd have tried that herbal remedy, if we would have done, the what if, what if, what if, what if, and we feel guilty. And the reason we do this, here's why. Because when we lose someone we love, as I've already said, we really, really don't want to go on without them. Our mind wants them back. And so what happens is we, on some intuitive level, realize that the only person we really have power to make changes in is ourselves. Mm-hmm. And so we start looking in the rearview mirror and asking, well, what if I would have done this? What if I would have done that? If I would have done this other thing, then maybe. And so what we're actually doing with this guilt and this reprocessing in our mind is we're trying to figure out a way that we could do something different and reverse history and get the person back.
Wow.
Wow. So this is a false guilt, almost always, unless, there are the rare occasions where a man will kill his wife or a wife will kill her husband. Well, then that would be appropriate guilt if the murder was involved. But we're not talking about that. That's so insignificantly small that doesn't really ever come into bear. Almost all of the situations, it's just loss when no one's at fault.
How do you get over that? I mean, how would you lead someone through who came to you and says, if I had just taken her to Mexico, to that doctor, if I had done this and that, how do you help that person get over that kind of thing?
Well, first off, you have to be truthful. You have to step back and say, wait a minute, what's the truth? Did you do something? We're talking about the guilt now. Did you do something wrong? Did you organize and plan your loved one's death? Were you plotting and working against the healing process? You see, because this guilt is how one is treating oneself. And of course, the answer is no. And as I see that, we then clarify that what you're really experiencing is not guilt. You're experiencing grief. And the guilt is actually a barrier to grieving. As long as we're feeling guilty, then we're still trying to find what we did wrong so we can undo it. And as long as we're spending our energy on what we did wrong so we can undo it, we are not yet actually processing the loss and grieving. And so the first step is to come to the reality, hey, I didn't do anything wrong. And in this world of sin, you can do everything right and still get bad outcomes.
That's true. That's true.
And so accepting the fact, hey, I didn't do anything wrong. I'm not guilty. I'm grieving. And then then we go forward in the grieving process.
Would there be some who would think not doing what was right is actually doing something wrong?
Can you expand on that?
Yeah. If taking that woman or that man to the doctor in Mexico was the right thing to do and I didn't do it, then I didn't do anything wrong, but I didn't do the right thing.
Well, how do you know it was right to take him to Mexico?
That's true.
Okay, it's all fantasy. That's all imagination. How do you know you wouldn't have gotten a plane crash on your flight down there?
That's true.
You both died. I mean, you know, how do you know that they wouldn't have poisoned her with some poison? I mean, this is what happens when we go down the what if game is the imagination creates the outcome that we want. That isn't evidence. That isn't fact. It creates the outcome, and it ignores all the other infinite possible bad outcomes that could have happened if you'd have gone down that trail.
I guess a better way of saying that would be the things that I did. I did all I knew to do, and that should be enough, right?
That's what. When it comes to the guilt aspects, you have to step back and say, did I do what I thought was best with the information that I had at the time? And many times in this world, we're put in situations where the decisions we have are not black and white. There is no definitive certainty. Should I go with chemotherapy and radiation? Should I go with natural remedies? Which one should I go with? Mm-hmm. Well, what I generally tell people is I tell them go with the evidence, whichever has the strongest evidence. And evidence would be double-blind placebo-controlled trials, not anecdotal testimony of persons. Go with evidence.
Yeah. We're moving into the miracle aspect and the hoping that God will perform a miracle. And is that a dangerous area to go? Is that an uncertain area to go, depending on God doing a miracle?
It's never wrong to ask God and trust Him to perform a miracle if it's His will to perform a miracle. He's always free to do that if we put our lives in His hands. Oftentimes, though, the reality is God doesn't perform miracles. Generally, the miracles are performed for the weak in faith, not the strong in faith.
And sometimes we think we get in God's way. God would have done a miracle if I hadn't gone over there and gone to that clinic. God would have done a miracle. I'll go here. Here I am. Well, what-ifing again, aren't I? I'm just what-ifing this thing.
It's still distorted thinking.
Yeah. Well, we're talking with Dr. Jennings today about a situation that I had heard about. A son of a friend in his mid-30s lost his wife 3 years ago, and he can't seem to move on 3 years later, and he wants to have a relationship, and we're exploring some of the ideas here. We don't know the specifics of this thing and never will, but we're exploring some of the ideas. And listener, hopefully something we say here might spark a thought in your mind as you deal with your brand of what I call unhealthy attachments. When we come back with Dr. Jennings, more on this, let's talk about God and our feelings about God when something doesn't happen the way we want it to happen. Is God trying to teach us something? Are we unteachable? Is God trying to ignore us? What's going on with God when our hearts are breaking? Stay tuned for more with Dr. Jennings. Phone lines are open, 800-775-4673. Stay tuned.
Here's Dr. James Markham with your daily heartbeat.
Everyone is talking about this word called cholesterol. Have you had your cholesterol checked? Well, what is cholesterol? Well, cholesterol is something called a lipoprotein. It's fat with a protein. And unfortunately, when we take a lot of these in our diets, usually through animal products, they can get clogged up in our arteries. There's the good cholesterol called the HDL and the bad cholesterol called the LDL. And unfortunately, the LDL can be clogs up our arteries, and we want less of the LDL and more of the HDL. Well, how is this accomplished? Well, first, don't eat the bad stuff. Try to eat the good stuff. Try to get some exercise, and most importantly, get your cholesterol checked so you can know if you're at risk for clogging up those arteries.
If you'd like more information, go to HeartWiseMinistries.org. That's HeartWiseMinistries.org.
When we come to a new life with Jesus Christ, because of sin, we bring into the relationship a lot of baggage that we've collected throughout our life. This baggage is often heavy and unbearable. Have you ever come to a turnstile while carrying suitcases in both hands? Even though you might not need your hands to get through the turnstile, you definitely can't get through holding on to the luggage. Well, what do? You have to let go. This is wonderful news in the Christian life. It's not about living in the past. The crucifixion took care of that. We can walk forward without all that baggage. We just need to connect to Christ. Would you like to learn today how to let go of that baggage you're carrying around? Call Life Talk Radio and enroll in the free Discover Bible Study course. All 26 lessons are based on God's Word and will empower you to live the Christian life walking hand in hand with Jesus. Enroll today to begin that stroll with Christ. Call 800-775-HOPE. That's 800-775-4673.
Welcome back to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. I'm your host, Charles Mills. I want to remind you, listener, if you are a Facebooker, and there's 4.5 million of us, 450 million of us, stop by Common Reason on Facebook and become a fan. You can get updates and listen to programs and just have all kinds of interaction with Dr. Jennings and his team. We would love to have you join us as a fan, and that's on Facebook. Also, commonreason.com. It is absolutely loaded with resources and information that you can use to better your life. There's a blog there. Interesting stuff on the blog. Program archives, resources, his book, Could It Be This Simple? Just stop by, check it out. Lots of fun, lots of things to learn. Dr. Jennings, we're talking about a gentleman here who lost his wife 3 years ago, unable to shake this, unable to have good, fulfilling relationships. We've talked about the possibility of the grieving process still going on, not being able to move by. One of the things that I know about this person is that he is angry with God over the death of the spouse. After all, God could have healed her. God could have done one of those many miracles we hear about in the Old Testament and the New Testament. Why didn't he? Why did God take away my wife?
Oh, you know, you've said that so nicely because I have so many patients that say the same thing. And I actually had a patient who came to see me who was depressed and angry and irritable and had been this way most of her life. And she believed that if anything went wrong in her life, it was God doing it to her. Mm-hmm. And so she, and I, you know, in the interview, I said to her, hey, do you believe in God? And she got angry and she looked at me. She says, don't you talk to me about God. And I said, what's going on with that? And she goes, everything I've ever cared about, God has taken from me. And anything bad that's going to happen in my life, it's God doing it. And I said, well, why is it you think that? And as we explored a little more, she told me that when she was 7, her mother was killed in a motor vehicle accident. And at the funeral, on the front row, as she sat there at the funeral, the preacher looked straight down at her and said, Jesus took your mommy to be with him.
Oh, my. What's that do to an 8-year-old mind? Hello. What's that do to that
and
mind?
And ever since then, she has believed that God is the God who takes mommies from little children.
Yeah.
Well, you said similar thing here. This man might think, why did God take my wife from me? And this is all a lie. God is not the God of death. Sin brings death. God is the God of life. He is the one who heals, who regenerates, who resurrects, who restores, who saves. This idea that God is the God of death is a distortion that keeps people afraid of him and closes hearts and minds to him. So I would say first, I would do with your friend what I do with my patients. Tell me about that. Why do you think God took your wife? Where do you get that from? I'd want to understand where it is that in his history, his life, that this concept got put into his mind that God takes people.
I mean, God stood by weeping and watched his son die. So let's not think that God is not aware of what's going on, but God apparently is allowing, do we use that word, allowing these things to happen to us?
I think sometimes people get confused because they look in the Old Testament times and immediately people will pop back, well, he destroyed the world of the flood and Sodom and Gomorrah and the 185,000 Assyrians and the firstborn of Egypt and the Korah, Dathan, and Abiram and so forth and so on. They start listing all these places in Old Testament times where God put people into the grave. He did it.
Yeah.
And they say, okay, yes, he did. Is that how the majority of people in the Old Testament died?
No.
Small you know, it all, majority. Interestingly enough, how did King Saul die? Do you know how King Saul died?
Sword?
Yes. After a battle where his troops were lost and both of his sons were killed, and the Philistines were coming up upon them, he said to his armor bearer, run me through that these uncircumcised fellows will not abuse me. And his armor bearer said, I won't do such a thing. And so King Saul fell on his own sword.
Fell on his sword.
Yeah. And committed suicide. And that's how it says it in 1 Samuel. In 1 Chronicles, it gives the same history. And it says, therefore the Lord put him to death.
Oh my. Okay.
Wait a minute. Right. He fell on a sword and the Lord put him to death? You have to question and ask, okay, why is it describing it this way? Well, in Scripture, God is given credit for that which he does not prevent.
Yeah.
Number one.
Say that again. God is given credit for that which he does not prevent. Wow. Okay, that's a good statement.
In Old Testament Scripture, that happens a lot.
Yeah.
Now, does that mean that all those examples we just gave were simply God withdrawing protective hand and allowing things to happen at the hands of others? I don't think so. We remember this story of the platoons that came to arrest Elijah. Elijah called fire down from heaven and they were consumed. I don't think that was anybody but God doing that. So then we have to ask the question, okay, why is God using power in Old Testament times to put people to rest in the graves, what we call death?
Mm-hmm.
But we have to remember that all those people will be resurrected because there's a resurrection coming for all people, both righteous and wicked, first and second resurrection. So that isn't the total end yet. So why would God do it though? And the common answer is, well, he was punishing wickedness. Really? Do you believe in a God who distributes punishment for sin before the judgment?
Before the judgment. That's right.
Yes. We all say that the judgment is yet to come, and then everyone is judged by what's in the books, and then there is a punishment to come based on what's in the book. I mean, this is the common teaching. So why are you telling us that God is doing that prior to judgment? What's that about? Is it really punishment for sin? Or is there some other thing going on here? And how I understand it is that as soon as man fell into sin, God's heart was compassionate, loving, forgiving, gracious, reaching out, coming after Adam. As Adam's running from God, God is pursuing Adam in love.
Yeah, that's true.
For what purpose? To punish Adam? No. What does he tell Adam as soon as he sees Adam? Hey, a Savior is promised. The Savior's going to come. He's going to crush the serpent's head. But the serpent is going to bruise his heel. Right there in Eden, we know that Christ is coming to save mankind. Now, did Satan know that as well? Of course he did.
Sure, absolutely.
After the break, we'll pick up and finish this explanation.
We certainly will. This is amazing stuff going on here on this program. Our phone lines are open. I want to remind you of that. 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. More with Dr. Jennings on this important topic. This is something that a lot of people are struggling with, and listener, you may be one of those people. This program is for you. God brought you here for a purpose, to hear this program on this day. So stay right with us, and we'll return shortly. I'd like to take time in our program right now, Dr. Jennings, to direct people to the commonreason.com website. Now, there's some fun things going on there, some interesting things. Can you bring us up to date on some of the enhancements and updates you've made on that site recently?
Well, we are always adding new material. Every week we do a Bible study lesson that gets uploaded every week, both with MP3 format and that's easily downloaded to an iPod or turned into a CD. We also put up my weekly notes for the Bible study class. I do a weekly blog. Then I blog on material that basically on questions that our listeners send in and ask that they'd like to have some information on. And our weekly radio show is made available from our website. And we have discussion forums that people are able to discuss. And then we've made a recent section called For You to Share. And in the For You to Share section, we have made downloadable and printable documents that people can download, and their print quality, you can print locally, and you can share on a whole host of topics. And if there's topics you'd like printable material on, email us and let us know, hey, would you make a printable document on this topic? And we will make that available and put those up there for your free download and distribution.
You know, we did a show on one of the topics you have on there, and that was Stop Smoking. That was an incredible show, and that information is available to our smokers listening to this program right here. If you want to kick the habit, you want to do it in a safe and effective way, Dr. Jennings has outlined steps for doing that. Incredible stuff. Also, I would recommend, if you are a parent and you have teenage kids, I listened to this program the other day. It's about an hour and a half long, but my goodness, is it full of good stuff. Human sexuality. If you have teenagers and they are wondering about this and sex and all that kind of stuff, there is a program you can listen to right there. It streams to your computer. Gather your young people around you and take a listen to that program. You will just be blown away with the simplicity and the beauty of what Dr. Jennings says concerning this important topic. I know, Dr. Jennings, you presented that live, and what was the response to that program when you gave that program live not too long ago?
I'm sorry, I missed that.
The Human Sexuality Program, the Human Sexuality Program on your website. You gave that program live. This is a recording of a live presentation.
Right.
What was response like when you did that?
Oh, yeah, it was tremendous. I've actually been requested to do that program at several local churches, and the response back from parents and adolescents both is it really made a huge impact in their life, and many of the young people came up to me and told me that they're going to make different decisions based on what they heard in that program.
That's right. It deals with the psychology of sex, what happens to the body when you have intimate relationships with people, and why it works so well in marriage, and why it is so confusing and damaging outside of marriage. It's not a thus saith the Lord. It's not a this is right and this is wrong. It's here's science, and here's what science says about
what this. I tried to do, and this program was based off of questions submitted by 300 high school students. So
right.
I outlined the science and the brain and the neurobiology science behind sexual relationships, how God designed things to run, and then what happens when things don't run that way. And then we answer the questions submitted by the high school students.
All right. That's on comeandreason.com. Check it out.
I pray, just not often. I think there's something to be said for quality over quantity.
How would you answer the question, are you praying regularly? This is Elizabeth George for A Woman After God's Own Heart. If your answer to the question is yes, praise God and continue being faithful. If your answer is no, ask yourself, what happened? Is it neglect, laziness, bitterness, distractions, plain old procrastination? Stop right now, bow your head and your heart in humility before God, and acknowledge your failure to pray to Him. Then pray. Pray from the Psalms. Examine me, O Lord, and prove me. Try my mind and my heart. Search me, O God, and know my heart, and see if there is any wicked way in me. God is calling you to a life of prayer. Answer the call. This is Elizabeth George.
Brian Bradley's hands have built a lot of houses over the years. Carla Sanchez's hands have made more great meals than she can remember. And Gary Murdoch's hands have taught chopsticks to lots of kids. These hands have done so much in life. They can do so much for life, by practicing fire safety. Make your home safe from fire. Maintain smoke alarms on every level in your home and test and replace the batteries in each alarm. Plan and practice an escape route. Know at least 2 exits from every room and be sure you know how to open your windows. Prevent fire, save lives, so you'll be able to give others a hand. For more information on how to keep your home safe from fire, go to our website at www.usfa.fema.gov. A message from the U.S. Fire Administration.
Jesus said in John 14:27, "Peace I leave with you. My peace I give you. Do not let your hearts be troubled and do not be afraid." Do you long for that peace in your life? Let's return to Simple Solutions with Christian psychiatrist and author Dr. Timothy Jennings. And welcome back to the program. I'm your host, Charles Mills, along with Dr. Jennings here, and we invite your phone calls today, 800-775-4673. We're talking about a topic that may be on the hearts and minds of our listeners right on this day. This may be a time when you are facing this very situation. Someone has passed away in your family, your spouse, and you at first look at God and say, "God, why did you let this happen? Where were you when my spouse was killed in that automobile accident or the plane crash or the sickness came and the doctors weren't able to help? Where were you, God? Why was there no miracle?" And Dr. Jennings has outlined for us in the last 15 minutes some very, very concrete ideas that we should face and how we should look at God and how we should look at the devil at times like this. Now, Dr. Jennings, I want to shift gears slightly and continue with God. What should we do?
Well, we didn't get to finish up. We didn't get to finish up a point I was on, and I want to finish that point. But I also want to give our audience a resource that they can go to for this. And many of my patients, and I've gotten emails from around the world actually, that this particular presentation has really helped bring healing to broken hearts. And if you go to our website, comeandreason.com, C-O-M-E-A-N-D-R-E-A-S-O-N, comeandreason.com, hit the media menu, then hit seminars, and then under the Healing the Mind section, you'll find a lecture or a presentation called Healing a Broken Heart. Short lecture, about 30, 35 minutes, but it has specific steps you can take to heal and recover in the aftermath of loss. And many, many people have emailed me that this is a great resource that has helped them find peace in the aftermath of loss in this world. So I want to recommend that to our audience. If you're struggling, if you're hurting, go to our website. It's free. Download it. You can burn a CD, listen to it in your car, and we hope that will be a blessing to you.
Absolutely.
Following up on what we were saying, though, I just wanted to answer the question on this idea about God killing and how sometimes people will say, "Well, I look in the Old Testament and see that he was killing people," and so forth and so on. And the way I understand it is simply this. Messiah was promised. Without the Messiah, without Christ, once man fell into sin, the whole human race would be lost. Once the Messiah was promised, the devil knew that the Messiah was promised. He began working to obstruct the arrival of the Messiah. And so in the Old Testament times, you see played out on planet Earth the actions of God working to keep open the avenue through which Messiah would come, and Satan working to shut down that avenue. At one point, the scriptures tells us that there was only one righteous man left on the entire earth. Everybody else had closed their hearts to God. And so God acted to keep open the avenue. If that one righteous man and his family would have been lost, where is Christ going to come? Through whom will he come?
For whom, yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Through whom, yeah. So we see God acting in Old Testament times to put people to rest in the graves. But if you notice, after Christ comes and completes his mission, after the cross, we don't find God doing this anymore. And it's not because the world is a much more gracious, kind, loving, safe place. We find just as much wickedness, idolatry, hedonism, violence, abuse, in fact, more so on a grander scale, nuclear weapons and everything else. We are doing much more pornography and vulgarity and abuse of people on a grander scale than ever in human history. And we don't find God interacting to kill people or put people into the graves. So, as I understand it, he was doing this. These were actions of love to keep open the avenue in emergency circumstances so that he could save and heal.
Interesting. Well, I'm glad he did that. I am glad. It gives us hope today on this program. It gives us hope because God did that. Now, let's talk about the positive side of God when someone has lost a spouse. What good is God in the midst of that kind of pain?
Well, my understanding is the only real healing for any heart-mind issue is in a relationship with God. I mean, this is the only way we'll find peace is in knowing the truth about God and then knowing that there's going to come a day when our loved ones are going to be restored to us.
Yes.
You know, I had a friend, I went to the funeral of the mother of one of my friends, and at the funeral, I went up to him and expressed my condolences, and he said to me, "It's okay. I know in whom my mother has believed, and I know I will see her again."
Amen.
Which stood in sharp contrast to many of my patients who do not believe in God, and they say, after the loss of a loved one, "I know I'll never see them again." Mm-hmm. Now, those two positions and beliefs do not have the same psychological and emotional impact. My friend had peace and hope. Many of my patients are discouraged and depressed.
We call it that great hope, don't we? The hope of eternal life in Jesus. And it is something that every Christian cherishes. And as the years roll by, I know I cherish it more and more. As I lose more people in my family and in my circle of friends, that hope has become just sterling to me. I just love that hope. It means so much.
And after my father died 16 years ago, and I was going through this process, I was convicted of the same thing. And I realized the only way I'm going to see my father again is when the Lord comes. And then I realized that the scripture says through Peter that we can hasten the day if we would do our job. If we as Christians would embrace the mission Christ has given us to do, when this gospel of the kingdom shall be preached to the whole world as a witness to all nations, then the end will come. The gospel of what kingdom? The kingdom of love. And we are to be taking forward the message of God's character of love to the world. And when we do that, then the end will come. We can be with our loved ones again. But we haven't. We get sidetracked into politics. Let's get the right judges in office. Let's get the right senators, the right congressmen. Let's get the right laws passed. Let's get the right policies made. Let's get the right environmental protections in place. Let's get we have been so diverted from our mission as a people to convert hearts and minds with the truth about God and who He is, that the Lord is still waiting for us to do our job. And that's the purpose of our ministry, is to tell the truth about God, which actually results in transforming hearts, minds, lives, and preparing a people to see Christ when He comes.
Boy. Dr. Jennings, there is a common question that people like my friend, the mid-30s guy, lost his wife 3 years ago, unable to move on. He thinks that if he were to have a relationship with another woman, get married, that he was being unfaithful to his first wife. The wife has passed away. What would you say to him if they asked that particular question to you?
I would say, did your wife love you? And what do you think he'd tell me?
He'd say, yes, absolutely.
And what do you think she would want for you for the rest of your
happiness,
life? Do you think
joy.
She would want you to be depressed, lonely, discouraged, pining away for her for the rest of your life? Or do you think she would want you to move on with your life and share the great capacity of love that you have with another and experience the love God designed for us to experience in life? What would she want for you? Now, if she loved you, she would want you to go on. If she was selfish, she would want to hold on to you and have you be miserable in her absence.
You know, as I was listening to the description...
Am I right or wrong there?
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right. And that is something that a lot of people need to realize, that you can't be unfaithful to a dead wife. You just can't. Because when a person dies, the commitment, the bond that you have, that you've made between you and that person and God, is broken by death. Some people would say, well, now, wait a minute. No, because God's coming again and I'll see my wife again. So I need to keep myself for my wife for the world to come. What's your answer to that?
Well, my answer to that is your marriage vows were till death do us part.
Right.
You've already parted. You're no longer husband and wife. The bond has been broken by death. That's what I would say to that.
Absolutely.
And
Absolutely.
When Christ comes, He says we will be as the angels in heaven. Whatever exactly that means, we don't know.
Yeah.
But it was in the context of who will you be married to?
Yeah.
And it isn't exactly as what we think here. And so I think those ideas are expressions. And I would explore the idea of, it seems to me that you don't want to let go and move on, that you want to stay stuck, that you are wanting to stay tied to a memory rather than moving forward in reality.
And this we want to be stayed to an earthly memory, and we don't want to carry some earthly memories to heaven with us.
And this actually is preventing healing, moving forward. I give the example of imagining walking in one of the national forests, say up in Alaska, a very remote wilderness area, hiking and camping with your spouse, and you're out quite a ways from any civilization, and your spouse has a heart attack and dies on the trail. There's no cell phone towers. There's no radios. Now, of course, you're going to sit down and you're going to grieve and you're going to cry and you're going to sit down next to them in the trail.
Yeah.
But eventually there comes a time that you have to make a decision. You either get up and go on without them, or you lay down and die there with them. And in life, emotionally, many, many people make the choice to emotionally, with their hearts, lay down and die with a dead spouse or a dead loved one. Their physical body gets up and goes through the motions of life. They get up, they go to school, they go to work, but their heart is no longer in life. Their heart is stuck somewhere in the past, and they basically say in heart, I'm not going on until I get my loved one back. And there has to be a realization this is happening, and a choice has to be made. You know, I love you. If you were here, I'd be with you. If I could raise you and bring you back, I would. But all those things I cannot do.
Yeah.
So I'm saying goodbye until we meet again.
It is tough. No one said this life was easy, but what you're saying is absolutely right and makes all kinds of sense, Dr. Jennings. This is marvelous stuff.
Now, something else I realized when I lost my dad and I was going through this process, I realized that my life was going to continue to unfold. Now, it could unfold down a pathway of pining away, crying, depression over the loss of my dad, or it could unfold that I heal that loss and move on and have a happy and healthy life. And when I realized those two options, and I also then realized my dad, what would my dad say when the resurrection comes? He's going to say to me, tell me, son, what did you do after I passed? Tell me about your life.
How did you move on? Yeah.
And if I told him, well, I spent the last 35 years crying for you, he'd kick my backside.
A heavenly kick. Yes, he would.
He would. He would not be happy with me at all. He would be hugely, hugely disappointed in me.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
If I was able to heal and go on, I can see he'll be so proud that I was able to do that and do something constructive with my life. And I tell people, this is how we honor those that we've lost. We honor them by moving on. We dishonor them by staying stuck.
So this friend of mine would actually be honoring the memory of his wife by living a life of joy and happiness and bringing love and joy and affection to another woman, another family that he builds. He would actually be honoring her memory by doing this, right?
Only if he heals his own heart first and avoids getting into a dysfunctional relationship that is simply masking over an unhealed broken heart that becomes very painful and damaging to other people. That wouldn't honor anybody. But if he heals his own heart first and moves into a healthy relationship and lives his life to the glory and honor of God and blessing to others, then sure, absolutely.
What I hear you saying is that the grieving process, and people have outlined the grieving process, the end result of the grieving process is growth. Not being buried in memories, but in other words, the grieving process takes you out of grief. Is that right?
Ultimately, yes. The ultimate conclusion of the grieving process in the classic literature is acceptance. That we come to acceptance of our loss and our acceptance of our new circumstance, and that enables us to move forward and grow.
All right. 800-775-4673. People are listening to this program today. They don't want to disturb you. But just in case I haven't asked the question you want, listener, and I do the best I can, but I may not know every question you want to ask. I love asking questions to Dr. Jennings. I look forward to it. But just in case I didn't ask your question, here's your chance to call and do it yourself. 800-775-4673. That's 800-775-4673. 1-800-236-4673. A lot of this stuff that you talk to us about, Dr. Jennings, takes time to sink in, and it needs to be mulled around in our hearts a little bit. And then the Lord can use this information and bring healing. And that's what we all need desperately in this life, lots and lots of healing. So if you have a question and you want something to mull over, here's the number, 800-775-4673. We'll take a short break and be back, so don't go away.
Too many Christians don't know the truth about dinosaurs, but Christian scientist Dr. Elaine Graham Kennedy is out to change that. Dr. Kennedy is a research scientist who has done field work at dig sites in remote places like Patagonia. She has spent her life studying dinosaurs, and now she has published a remarkable book called Dinosaurs, published by Pacific Press, that is both scientifically based and biblically sound. It answers the questions many Christians ask. Did dinosaurs really live? Are dinosaur bones fake? Who made the dinosaurs? What happened to them? And were dinosaurs on Noah's Ark? Dr. Kennedy's book, Dinosaurs, is filled with interesting facts, photographs, and colorful charts. It is a must for every Christian home and perfect for reading with your kids. To get a copy, visit www.pacificpress.com or call 1-800-765-6955.
I was 8 years old when I realized what it was that I had to do. I was walking down the street and I saw so many homeless men and women. I knew I had to find a way to help. 2 years later, I started a nonprofit group to feed the homeless. Hi, my name is Amber Kaufman, and today I'm 20 years old. For the past 10 years, the organization I created, Happy Helpers for the Homeless, has delivered love, food, and clothing directly to men and women living on the streets. We've also helped other young people discover the joy in serving others. You know there's something you need to do in your community. But maybe you thought, what can I do? I'm just one person. You'll be amazed at what a difference you can make if you just put your mind to it. Decide today to make that difference. Get out and live. Volunteer.
Brought to you by the Hitachi Foundation's Yoshiyama Award for Exemplary Service to the Community and this station.
Welcome back to our program. Once again, our phone lines are open, 800-775-4673, or you can just sit back and listen. I don't mind that at all, and Dr. Jennings and I will fill the time with information I hope that you can use to bring you some healing and peace in your own mind. Dr. Jennings, my friend, we've been talking about my friend and his inability to deal with the loss of his spouse, and it's been 3 years, and et cetera. How can I help? What can I do for people who are in some of these very dark, shadowy areas? What can us laymen do? They can go talk to you, what can we do?
You know, I think it's a great question. And I think first thing is stop being afraid to talk to the people who've lost loved ones. Mm-hmm. What happens is after the loss of a loved one, friends will often disengage and pull back. Not because they don't care, it's because they don't know what to say. I don't know what to say. Yeah. So actually they stop visiting, stop doing stuff. Sometimes the person is going through dark periods and you'll call them up and say, hey, let's go out and do this. I don't feel like it. And so you may get a couple of rejections where they're not in the mood. They don't want to go out to the bowling. They don't want to go out to a movie. They don't want to go out to eat. And so because you've gotten some rejections, our human tendency is to, disengage. We need to quit disengaging. Keep engaging our friends who've lost loved ones. Don't abandon. Don't disengage. And then, confront in a loving way. Hey, I care about you, man, and I know you've lost somebody. I know it's hard, but what are you going through right now? What is it that you're stuck with? How can I help? Sometimes it's just being there. Job's friends came and just sat with him for 7 days.
Sat with him, yeah, 7 days.
That's all they did. They didn't say a word. Sat with him, and then afterwards they weren't real helpful. I have to tell you,
no.
They started tempting him with all types of distorted ideas, and this is something we want to restrain. You say, what can a friend do? Not infect a wound.
Okay? Interesting.
Infect a wound. Like somebody who's lost a loved one, somebody comes along, well, you must really have sin in your life because this wouldn't have happened to you if you'd have been faithful.
Ouch. Oh, my goodness.
That's infection. Goodness. Or like the pastor said, Jesus took your mommy to be with him. Infected that mind.
Infected.
See? So first thing, watch what you say. Don't infect wounds. Yeah. Encourage, yeah. Comfort, let the person know you love them, and usually empathic statements, and these can be very powerful statements. Hey, you know, I care for you so much, or I love you, or you're my friend. I wish I could take away your pain. I really do. Mm-hmm. But I can't. But I want you to know I'm here for you. I care about you. Just the acknowledgement they're in pain and that you would take away their pain if you could is very powerful.
Or you could say something like, you know, I can't take away your pain, but maybe I can give you 2 minutes of happiness today. Just 2 minutes. Let me tell you a joke. Let me take you out to eat. Let me show you something cool. Let me just give you 2 minutes of happiness, then you can go back to grieving. That's non-threatening.
Those types of things, yeah, being there.
Yeah, okay.
But
avoiding
the critical, judgmental, and also trying to avoid the this is what you need to do type of statements.
Yeah.
You need to just get over it. You need to suck it up.
Because a lot of people do that, they throw God at you. You know, well, God doesn't want you to grieve. God is going to heal you eventually. God is going to, and they say like God is a band-aid and let's put God on. But that's not helping them because they don't know how to put God on.
Mm. Yeah, or if you had faith and those types of, there's so many distortions. Yeah. Empathizing, giving people permission to work through it, and people grieve in different ways. Some people grieve quietly. Some people grieve loudly.
Yeah.
You know,
is it possible for some people not to grieve at all? I've known people that, you know, lose someone that they love and it's like nothing happened. Is that healthy?
If you mean not grieve in the sense of not be affected by it, no, it's not. Mm-hmm. We're only unaffected by the things that we have no connection to or don't care about. Mm-hmm. So, you hear, you know, and we all hear on the news that so-and-so died in such-and-such a place around the world, and we are not significantly grief-stricken by that. We don't know them. We have no connection to them. It's a fact. It's a data point that we're aware of. When we have a heart connection, though, we can't be unaffected by a loss.
That's right.
Now, whether we actually grieve, if you mean grieve as in a healthy working through of the loss to bring healing to a broken heart, no, not everyone does that.
Okay. That's probably why we grieve when we hear, you know, we hear 15 people died in an explosion in Baghdad. We say 15 orphans died. Suddenly we have more empathy for those orphans. We have a connection, an emotional connection with the children that we may not have with adults. Am I on the right track here?
I think that's what we do. We see more of a, allow ourselves to connect to our, feel more sympathy, more empathy. In those circumstances. But psychologically, we generally, because there's so much tragedy in the world, because the news, you know, in the era in which we live, we get so many more reports of tragic and horrible things happening that we become a certain callousness to it. In the old days, when you lived in a small community without television and radio, and you had 100 people in your church and you knew all of them, one death would impact you, but you may not hear of that many that often.
That's true.
It's not a daily thing. You pick up the paper and hear and read about 5,000 people dying, which you could probably, if you search the web today, find out that 5,000 people died in various places of the world.
Absolutely.
And so our minds can't process that much at once. So we become certain psychological, emotional disconnected from that.
And this is slightly off topic, but maybe that's not a bad thing, or is it a bad thing? Should we not become so callous to this stuff that's going on in the world that it doesn't bother us? If it doesn't bother us, should we say, hey, something's wrong with me?
It depends on how you mean by bothered. I think if we personalize it, then that would not be healthy. I think if we see it from a larger perspective as God sees it, and we grieve for the sickness of the world, we grieve for how it's breaking God's heart, we look around and see the hurt and heartache for others, and we have empathy in that direction, and we long for the day when there will be no more pain, suffering, and death, and we focus our energies on ministering in the community in which we have to relieve suffering, to reveal the truth that will ultimately bring an end to all pain and suffering. I think that's okay. That's healthy. But if we personalize it, and I'm overwhelmed, I'm stressed, I'm worried, and this type of thing, then I think that can be unhealthy.
Let me just bring the program to a close in the next couple of minutes with this question, Dr. Jennings. What can we do who are alive, who are married to wonderful spouses? How do we start preparing now for the eventuality that our spouse may be taken from us in illness or an accident. We don't want to think about it. You know, it's hard to buy insurance because you don't want to think about dying and leaving that spouse by yourself. But there's got to be a preparation that we can begin slowly now for that eventuality. What would that be?
Yeah, I think that the preparation is developing a personal relationship with Jesus Christ, where it is no longer I that lives, but Christ lives in me. That we stop living for self and our needs, and we become people who love others more than self, so that when those losses come, we experience them in the context of a larger whole, recognizing that these are just temporary and transient losses that will be restored one day. I think that's the ultimate preparation. I think it would be a mistake to become morbid and focused on the eventualities and begin imagining future losses, because we do not know what the future holds. We know that that possibility exists, but we don't know when the Lord's returning. We don't know whether we'll lose someone or whether we'll be lost before them.
It's true.
And so to focus on those directions, I think, can become morbid. I think we have an awareness of our mortality and the mortality of those that we love, but we press onward expecting deliverance from this world of sin and using our energies to promote the health and happiness of others.
I think one of the most effective emotional fuel that I use, and you've talked about it often here, and I recognize what you're saying, is that we need to, as Christians, think of the continuity of life. That this life is temporary, there's a new life to come, a better life to come, and if you think of life and death under those circumstances, in that lineage, suddenly what happens in this world, although it breaks our heart, it doesn't take us out because we know there is a better life to come. I think that's what I heard you say, right, Dr. Jennings?
It's all about context. We see the context, and we see this is transient, and there's an eternal reality without pain and suffering. It gives us a template and a structure upon which we can process and handle these things. It doesn't mean we won't miss the loved one, but it gives us a foundation to build upon, and it also puts us in connection with a loving Savior who can comfort. Remember, blessed are the mourn, you will be comforted.
Yes. Oh, my. Well, this has been a very, very effective show today. I know I have learned a lot, and listener, I hope you have too. This is a show that we need to think about and listen to again and again, and you can do that. Go to comeandreason.com, and it'll be posted in just a few days, and you can check this show out and maybe download it and play it for someone else who may be in this type of situation. We don't have to live in darkness. We don't have to live with sorrow overwhelming us, because there is a God who loves us, a God who has made a plan, and we have a bright tomorrow waiting if we connect with the God who made that plan possible. Dr. Jennings, thank you so much for being with us today. Always a pleasure to talk with you. And listener, here is a website. Check it out. Write it down. comeandreason.com. You can read Tim's blog there and the program archives and resources. And Dr. Jennings has a fan page as well on Facebook. Take a moment and put him on your friends list there as a fan. And you check out what's going on with comeandreason.com and Dr. Jennings' wonderful ministry. Well, that's it for today. Until next time, this is Charles Mills, along with Dr. Timothy Jennings, inviting you to apply the simple solutions God placed in your heart today. Goodbye, everyone.
Simple Solutions is a production of Life Talk Radio and Dr. Timothy Jennings, and is made possible by your generous support. For more information, visit www.comeandreason.com.